space regularly.
For more tips and resources, visit www.staplesadvantage.com.
Still at a conference in Brussels, Defense Secretary James Mattis continues to say that he's optimistic that NATO allies will boost defense spending so that Washington doesn't have to reduce support for the military alliance, as President Trump has threatened.
The message that I brought here about everyone carrying their fair share of the burden, the sacrifice to maintain the best defense in the world, was very well received. It was not contentious.
Mattis also saying the U.S. would deal with Russia from a position of strength, and when asked about whether U.S. troops might be sent to Syria for the fight against ISIS, he said,
I first want to talk to the other allies, and we'll decide where we're going. I'm going to fly from here into the Middle East.
A damaged emergency spillway at the Oroville Dam is holding up amid the latest rainstorm in Northern California. People evacuated from communities below that dam have been allowed to return to their homes, but they've been told to stay on alert as they may have to leave them again. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Ah, fresh powder. I'll get the skis.
Ugh, I can't.
Winter nasal congestion. Is it A, cold, B, sinus pressure, C, allergies?
I'm not sure.
For all of the above, the answer is D, Allegra D, a maximum strength decongestant plus a powerful non-drowsy antihistamine for 24 hours of relief.
Feel better?
Yep. Feel like racing?
Hey, wait!
This winter, the answer is Allegra D. Look for Allegra D at the pharmacy counter. Use as directed.
Phoenix, Arizona will not become an official sanctuary city as the city council last night voted down a petition to adopt sanctuary status for immigrants.
Residents who spoke at the meeting were about evenly split, and Mayor Greg Stanton says no one wants to live in a city where crime victims and witnesses are afraid to go to police out of fear of deportation.
That's why, as long as I'm mayor of the city of Phoenix, we will not participate in a 287G program or any other agreements with the federal government that would conscript and deputize our officers to act as immigration agents.
Police Chief Jerry Williams says Phoenix must cooperate with ICE under SB 1070.
We're guided by state law, and we don't get to pick and choose which state laws we get to follow.
The council also voted to form a study committee on how it can challenge SB 1070.
That's Ted Houston reporting. Winston Churchill apparently believed humans might not be alone in the universe. Mark Mayfield has that story.
A recently uncovered essay indicates that Winston Churchill was pretty sure intelligent aliens were out there somewhere. An unpublished essay the legendary British statesman wrote in 1939 has been in the archives of the National Churchill Museum in Fulton, Missouri since the 1980s. In Are We Alone in the Universe? Churchill wrote he was not so impressed by what he called the success we are making of our civilization here to think that Earth is the only spot in the universe with living, thinking creatures. An Israeli astrophysicist reviewed the essay last year and discusses it in an article in the science journal Nature.
Have a close encounter with us at USARadio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site, and we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
On today's program, I'll be talking about why I hate Al Roker, the pros and cons of cell phone use at work, why waking up earlier could make you more productive, one lesson you can learn from Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, seven ways your business can get more customers to call you, I'll have five do's and don'ts you should know about your business cards, and why communication is key from collecting a delinquent account. It's Thursday, February 16th, 2017, just 1 year from the big day. I'll have all that and more right now on Taking Care of Business. Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jim Gannot, and the program is called Taking Care of Business. And for the next hour, we're going to talk about issues affecting businesses large and small here in the borough of Flemington, New Jersey, and on the national scene as well. Before we get going, a brief check of the weather shows it's currently 33 degrees here in Flemington, and today it'll be windy with clouds and sun and a high of 38 degrees with a low of 21. For tomorrow, it'll be mostly breezy with lots of sunshine, a high of 43 and a low of 23. And then get ready for the warm-up, because on Saturday we're going to have a mix of clouds and sun, a high of 57 degrees and a low of 36. And for Sunday, old Dolly's coming out of the garage, because it will be sunny with mild temperatures, a high of 61 and a low of 33, with temps in the 50s all week. And a current check of the financial market shows the Dow is currently down 12 points to 20,598.99. The NASDAQ is down 12.27 to 5807.05. The S&P 500 is down 4.69 to 2344.56. Oil is down 22 cents to $52.89 per barrel. Gold is up $8.50 to $1,241.60 an ounce. Facebook viewers, you are up to date. Now listen to the rest of the show by tuning in to HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. Thanks for joining us. Right, and for the rest of you, I thank you for joining us here at Taking Care of Business. It must be Thursday, so here we are. So I do apologize. Last week there was no show, and that was as a result of the blizzard of 2017, Snowmageddon. I can't remember the word, the winter whiplash, as Al Roker called it. And I'm really getting tired of Al Roker pumping us up, getting us all excited about the next fantastic snowstorm, and schools have to close and hunker down. Don't forget to buy all your eggs and milk and goodies. And then it's like nothing happens. You know, we had in Bridgewater, we got about 6 inches of snow. I was out at work by 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I couldn't get out here before that because of some of the roads. But I mean, it was not a big event. You know, this was nothing snow wise, and by 3 o'clock everybody was back out on the highway. So I'm just getting a little tired of Al Roker pumping us up. I mean, I can tell in the last 2 or 3 years where there's been a couple of instances where he predicts 2 feet of snow and we get absolutely nothing. So Al, you better get up on the rooftop there at 30 Rock, check the weather radar systems, and see if you can figure out how to tell us what the weather's actually going to be. If he was a baseball player, he'd be a Hall of Famer, because he only gets the forecast right about a third of the time. So, Al, you just got to do a better job. I can't stress it enough that we're looking for more out of our weather people. I do want to announce today that next year, on February 15th, there will be no show. February 15th, 2018, they're not going to have a show, because today, February 16th, is the 1 year date from my son's wedding. So we're looking forward to that. We went out to Long Island to see the venue where the reception is going to be taking place, at the Bethpage Country Club, which I wasn't aware. It was actually just a state park, but it's hosted the U.S. Open a few times. It's hosting the PGA Championship back in 2019. And looking forward to, obviously, my son getting married. And now we've hit that 1 year milestone. So I'm pretty sure that the clock will start ticking just a little bit faster over the next couple of months. So looking forward to that. All right. So getting into the program, is called Taking Care of Business. And again, I thank you for joining us. The big part of today's program is going to be talking about
cell phone use in the workplace. And we're going to get into that after the break. So one story before that, because it is applicable both to my business as well as everybody, but we have been doing more and more printing of business cards, business literature, like door hangers and pamphlets and brochures and things like that. And there are some do's and don'ts when it comes to business card usage. How you design them, how you carry them, how you exchange them, and every smart business owner should know and practice them. So here's where we're going to break those down into the five do's and don'ts. So when you're designing your card, you do want to pay attention to the composition of the card and the message that it conveys. Stick to the standard size and thickness, and I've seen cards made of plastic and metal and wood, and they're eye-catching and durable, but they are still more expensive than cardstock, especially if recycled materials are used. It's also difficult for a prospect or a client to jot a quick note on them. You do want to consider employing additional printing processes. Now you have foil stamping, raised lettering, rounded corners, color photography, holograms, etc., if your budget allows for them. But don't commit to an elaborate, expensive card if your clientele will see no value in it. You also, and this is where a lot of people make a mistake, because, and I can't tell you how many times this happens in our business, you have to carry a number of business cards with you at all time, in your purse, in your wallet, in a notebook, something, but do carry them in a business card case or carry them somewhere where you'll be able to retrieve them quickly. Don't carry them loosely in your pocket or a purse. You want to have a special pocket for them so you know exactly where they are. Also, don't drop your business cards in bowls for raffles, as you will only be contacted by somebody trying to sell you something later on. And don't leave a stack of your cards at random tables. Don't thumbtack them to the bulletin boards in the ShopRite or something like that, or give them to someone else to hand out for you. This practice cheapens the value of your card and of you as a professional using the business cards. So there's five quick steps on do's and don'ts of what to do with business cards. I can't tell you how many times vendors will come into my store, and they'll want to, just yesterday, in fact, a gentleman came in. He was looking to sell us inks for our two sign printing machines. And these are expensive inks. They're $30,000 or $40,000 machines. And when I asked him at the end, do you have a business card? He said, no. And I'm like, wait a minute, you don't have a business card? Well, I ran out. I don't have any with me. You know, I'm waiting for new ones from the corporate office. And I'm like, we print business cards here. And he goes, really? By the time he left, we had an order for his new business cards, complete with logo and foil printing and things like that. So I'm really not sure if he ever had them in the first place. But again, this is an extension of you. This is the leave behind that will make people remember who you are. So make sure that you are prepared and ready to leave a business card behind with them. All right, we're up to the break. When we come back, we're going to talk about cell phone and personal computer use in the office. Allow it? Don't allow it? Is it good? Is it bad? Heated discussion coming up. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
I'm your ice cream man, stop me when I'm passing by.
It's time to visit Pambie's, the newest ice cream shop in town. Pambie's Purely Delicious Ice Cream, Gelato, and Sorbet, made in Hunterdon County from unique blends of natural extracts, herbs, and spices. Created with a rich, creamy texture bursting with flavor. Tickle your palate with exotic flavors such as rose cardamom, hot mango, and ginger lemon, or satisfy your craving for dark chocolate, pecans, and caramel. Located on Route 31 south of Clinton, Pamby's, purely delicious.
See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site, and we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. So glad you could join me. My name is Jim Gano, the owner of Crown Trophy here in Flemington, and for the past 5.5 years, the host of this program that you've decided to listen to, Taking Care of Business. So glad you could join me. Well, this week, something happened in my office that really ticked me off, more so than Al Roker getting a forecast wrong, and I kind of wanted to see how this impacts other businesses. So basically what's happening is I have a young man in my store for the next 3 to 4 months who's training with me on how to run a Crown Trophy franchise. He's going to be assigned a franchise out in Long Island. And so the corporate bigwigs asked if he could sit with me for a couple of months and kind of learn how to run the business, how, a little bit about business, since he doesn't have a business background. And I said, sure. So this week I was talking about workflow and the importance of order in, order out, due date order, and trying to emphasize to him the importance of having a flow in your production area. So there's a great video on YouTube about Amazon and how from the time you click, you know, place my order until it shows up at your door, what goes into finding that piece in the warehouse, getting it boxed and then shipped to you. So it's about 5 minutes long. And I told him intermittently I might stop the video to talk about different aspects of it. So we get through the first like 30 seconds and I stop it and I notice that he's looking down, not looking at the screen, but looking down. I tell him a little bit about my thoughts on the first 30 seconds and then we continue with playing the video and then I stop it around another 30 or 45 seconds and again he's looking down. We continue on and then for the third time I stop the tape and I look at him. I go, "What are you doing?" He goes, "Oh, I'm just texting and answering emails." And then I just lost it. I said, "You know, that's incredibly rude that you would do that when I'm trying to train you. I'm taking time out of running my business to train you how to run yours, and you can't even give me the common courtesy of listening and paying attention." So then we talked about the importance for me of a no cell phone, no personal computer use policy in my business. Because anytime you're on that phone, anytime you're texting, emailing, whatever, watching videos, and you're not working, you're basically stealing from your boss. And I challenged him. I said, go to a restaurant, go to Staples, go to a grocery store, and look at the customer service people. He came in this morning and he said, "You know, it's funny. I went to Home Depot, I went to Staples, and sure enough, I noticed people, clients, or rather associates there, were busy on their phones but not paying attention to the customers." I said, "How does that make you feel as a customer?" He goes, "Well, I kind of felt pretty bad." The other part of this is that if you're at work in the middle of the day and you're on the phone texting your friend, your girlfriend, your mother, whatever, that means that you're not being productive. It also means that the person on the other end of the phone isn't being productive, and two businesses are suffering. Harvard did a study about worker productivity, and every year it seems that the number goes down to the point where this year, worker productivity is estimated in an 8-hour day to be 5 hours and 15 minutes per day. Now, when you sit at your desk, you say, "No, no, no, I work all day, 8 hours a day." Think about anything that distracts you. If you go to the internet and you see an interesting news story, and then you read that news story, unless you're a newsman or woman, you could catch that on the evening news at night, or you can also be doing your personal emails at home when you get home at 5:30 or 6 o'clock. So let's just extend that a little bit. So if you have an employee who's only productive 5 hours and 15 minutes a day, that means 13.75 hours per week are lost in productivity. Multiply that by 52 weeks, and you have 715 hours per year where your employees, each individual employee, according to Harvard, is not being productive. 715 hours. Now, that's just a number. Until you divide that number by 8, the average workday, and then you find that your employees are not productive for a cumulative 89.375 days per year. That's 3 months, which means that you're paying them a 12-month salary, but getting only 9 months worth of productivity. So I put this out on Facebook last night, asked a lot of people that I'm connected with, what is your policy? The way I wrote it was, I'll be talking about personal cell phone use. Does your company have a policy that allows or prohibits cell phones, texting, using office computers for personal use? Please share your thoughts. John from Ohio mentioned he's a driver ed instructor for AAA, and he says no cell phone use, and it should not even be visible. That's AAA's policy. Robin, who works for a large pharmaceutical company, says that now that they've moved into flex spaces, the design and the etiquette ask that if you're going to be talking for longer than 10 to 15, you should find it what they call a focus room, which is kind of like a tiny fish tank. But in meetings, you should be paying attention to the person who's doing the talking. You know, but she still finds that people will routinely text, email, even bring their laptops in and type away. She said that they don't have set hours, people float in and out, and because the work is more project-based, meetings are better in person, so it's common for most people to be in the office from 9 to 4. Carly, I believe she lives in North Carolina, says she's able to take calls if necessary, but you have to get off the floor and out into the hall. She works in a kitchen, and it's a dangerous place for even a phone distraction can be trouble. Then Robin jumped back in, and she said she just talked to a friend who works in a small family business, typical 8 to 5, and it's frowned upon to use the cell phone or work computers for personal use. Richard mentioned that it depends on the job if it's interfering with work getting done and individual performances. Jim said that there are many reasons for no cell phone use. Apps now allow for recording conversation, photos of the workplace or employees, among others. He works in the hotel industry, and he's seen employees get into arguments via private messaging, which then spills over into their attitude towards their guests. All workplaces should have a way that in an emergency, someone could reach an employee quickly. And that's kind of a key underlying statement. What I tell my employees is, like, if you get a text, it should usually mean that someone's arm fell off, that they're being held for ransom, or that they've died. In other words, no cell phone use. But he also, Jim went on further to say that the use of work computers for personal use should be frowned upon as well. Any PC with credit card information, or for that matter, client information or financial data, should not have slots for flash or thumb drives and remain PCI compliant. Also, allowing personal use could expose the company's network to viruses or malware. Wendy wrote in and said that her friend has to deposit her phone at the front desk when she gets to work. She did mention that that was a doctor's office. Nancy, who also works in a kitchen, says no phones in the kitchen or serving area. She does let her staff make text in like an emergency, but never in front of customers. They have to leave the serving area. And then if they do have to do this and it's not an emergency, she will have to talk to them about it. Josh, who's a landscaper, you've heard me talk about him many times on the program. He has a strict phone policy. They stay in the truck until lunchtime. If he's out, then the foreman or the crew chief is allowed to use their phone to contact Josh, but workers can't. And he said that one time he was texting someone and almost got hit by a truck backing up because he wasn't paying attention. April, who I believe works in Walmart, says they're not allowed to have them on them during any shifts. They can only use a store phone if it's an emergency. So it's more and more as the younger generation comes up through the workforce, I think because you see everybody who's under the age of 15 with a phone in their hand, typically pressed up to their eyeball, this is their way of life. They just don't understand what it means in the workplace when we say no use or no cell phone use. So how do you decrease cell phone use at work? Well, first, cell phones have become so indispensable for some people that they carry them virtually every waking hour, including at work. Cell phone usage in the workplace can cause problems because of noise levels and lost productivity. Employees engaged in personal cell phone conversations or using their cell phones to check social networking sites are wasting their employers' times unless they are on break. The potential for lost productivity is a key reason some employers seek to decrease cell phone use at work. How about policies? Companies who are studying cell phone usage by employees should issue company guidelines governing cell phone use in the workplace. Guidelines that are fair and flexible acknowledge the importance of cell phones while striking a balance that is fair to the company and its workers. Banning cell phone use altogether could be punitive for a single parent who relies on cell phone text messaging to communicate with their children. Allowing loud conversations and unrestricted use of phones can cause distractions for several employees, not only for the person using the phone, but for all those around them. I will say that in my business, I do have some women working with me that have children, and I always say, look, if we can restrict it to, hey, mom, I'm home from school, and things like that, or if they need something for their sports activities, that's fine. But texting, hey, mom, what's for dinner, that wouldn't be acceptable. In meetings, policies are looking to decrease cell phone use by banning phones from all meetings, brainstorming sessions, group training sessions, and conferences. Inc. magazine suggests having employees leave phones at their desks during these events. Placing the phone's ringtone on silent isn't enough to avoid distractions. Employees with access to cell phones in a meeting may be tempted to watch for missed calls or read text messages and email. In production areas, companies engaged in assembly line manufacturing or even a fast food restaurant should ban the use of cell phones except during breaks. Using a cell phone while operating machinery could cause mistakes or injury. This standard can apply to workers in other positions, including customer service. Workers in these positions should be allowed to receive emergency phone calls on a company telephone, and if possible, they should receive breaks at the same times each day so that friends and family know the best time to reach them on their cell phones. And obviously, there's a little bit of self-control that we have to look for. Employees can voluntarily decrease cell phone usage at work by leaving the devices in the car or turning phones off and leaving them in a purse or a backpack. Over time, the employee can train himself to check for cell phone messages once before lunch and once afterward, limiting actual cell phone conversation to break time. And finally, it all comes down to the company culture. The right company culture reduces personal cell phone usage. A company should insist on proper cell phone etiquette, which means no loud ringing of cell phones and only brief, hushed conversations. So, you know, getting back to it, like I said, if it's an emergency, by all means, first of all, every employee and their family should have the work phone number so that if something is an actual emergency, they can get to the person as quickly as possible. And I would literally stop what we're doing to make sure that a person that has a family emergency would be able to get home. If they were upset, I would take them myself. But the constant buzzing in the office, you know, with the girlfriends telling the boyfriends, you know, I love you, I can't wait to see you, you know, where are we going to dinner, do you want to get together over the weekend? That's not work-related. And it's almost as if when they talk about culture, that the employee has to also train the family and train the friends. Look, I'm working, and hopefully you are too, and during those hours, I have to be left alone. People forget that you're only at work for about 8 or 9 hours a day, so if you're home by 5:30, you got all night long to be talking to your friends via text or answering personal emails or something like that. There's plenty of time. It doesn't have to be done on company time. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100 in Chamber Radio. We're going to step back for a news break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the ultimate guide for waking up early and why some people feel it's the best way to get the most done during your day.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
I believe that the great opportunity for peace comes from a regional approach, from involving our newfound Arab partners.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu speaking to reporters yesterday at the White House. Netanyahu responded to allegations that he should go to the Palestinians to try to negotiate peace.
If anyone believes that I, as Prime Minister of Israel, responsible for the security of my country, would blindly walk into a Palestinian terrorist state that seeks the destruction of my country, they're gravely mistaken.
While many in the liberal media are celebrating leaks from intelligence officials, President Trump calling them out, stating very plainly they're against the law.
From intelligence, papers are being leaked, things are being leaked. It's criminal action, criminal act, and it's been going on for a long time.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
This report is brought to you by Staples. It's Monday morning, and you've got a schedule full of meetings. But what if you aren't feeling well? Staples' 7th annual cold and flu survey reveals that nearly 80% of U.S. workers go into the office when they are ill, despite being aware of the danger it presents to their workplace. 73% of those surveyed also report that they caught a cold or the flu in their office last year, with nearly one-third citing their sick coworkers as the culprit. Chris Carenti, VP and General Manager of Staples Facility Solutions, offers some advice.
Staying home from work when you're feeling ill can often feel like a tough choice to make, but it's a necessary one. Not only are you spreading germs, but sick employees are generally less productive and can impact a business's bottom line. Cold and flu viruses can live on a surface for up to 3 days, so keep germs at bay by washing your hands and disinfecting your workspace regularly.
For more tips and resources, visit www.staplesadvantage.com.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. So glad you could join us. My name is Jim Gano, the owner of Crown Trophy here in Flemington. And again, glad you could join us as we get together every week at this time to talk about issues affecting businesses large and small. Back to the program in a minute, but first a check of the weather shows it's currently 34 degrees at 1234. And today we're going to have, it's going to be a little windy with clouds and sun, a high of 38 and a low of 21. For tomorrow, it'll be mostly breezy with lots of sunshine, a high of 43 degrees and a low of 23. And then it's time to get ready for the warm-up, because on Saturday, we're going to have a mix of clouds and sun with a high of 57 and a low of 36. And for Sunday, old Dolly is coming out of the garage because it will be sunny and mild with a high of 61 degrees and a low of 33. So it's time to start her up and take her for a drive, get some gas flowing through the carburetor again, and make sure that she's running in anticipation of the summer season this year. Temps in the 50s all next week, so looking forward to that as well. There's been a lot of talk lately about what time is a good time to wake up in the morning. What is the ideal time for everybody to be at their very best? And there's been a movement afoot lately called the 5 o'clock club, where a lot of people are saying they get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And it doesn't mean that you're just jumping out of bed, taking a shower, and running to the office. It's just what people are saying is the ideal time for them to get up. Maybe they're going to exercise. Maybe they're going to meditate, get something to eat, and then get ready for their day. Now, for the past 4 years, I've been working on this. I've been researching it, experimenting, and there's been a lot of excuses to finally reach a point where waking up early is as much a habit under my command, but it is worth it. Now, maybe you've tried to develop the same habit probably more than once, and for some reason or another, you've failed. And luckily, you don't need to go through this again by yourself, because we can do it together with a few quick lessons. Now, without a doubt, the habit of waking up early had the biggest impact on my life because it allowed me to focus several hours of the day on myself, my family, and my primary daily goals, which had an incredible influence on every other area of my life. The importance of waking up early has been acknowledged by many successful individuals, such as Indra Nooyi, who is the president or the CEO of PepsiCo, who gets up at 4:30 every morning. Richard Branson, the founder and chairman of the Virgin Group, wakes up at 5:45. Michelle Obama, the former first lady, got up at 4:30 in the morning. Tim Cook, the Apple CEO, up at 4:30 in the morning, not waking up. He actually starts sending emails at this hour. Howard Schultz, who's the Starbucks CEO, gets up before 5 o'clock every morning. And Jack Dorsey, who's the Twitter co-founder, 5:30 a.m. And there's many other incredible people who are on this 5 a.m. bandwagon. Now, if you are ready to commit and establish a habit of waking up early, then welcome to the 5 a.m. club. To a certain degree, it's been over-glorified in the last couple of years, but waking up early doesn't mean necessarily waking up at 5 a.m. I'm not saying you can't do it, but I am saying that maybe you shouldn't, at least not before you consider your current lifestyle. One of the reasons why it took me a couple of years to stabilize this habit is because I didn't bear into consideration my way of life. Typically, I like to go to bed around 11:30 every night. Then when I'm getting up at 5, that only leaves me with about 5.5 hours of sleep. So deciding an hour when you want to wake up depends on your current activities and responsibilities, such as work or school, family. You know, do you have kids, a spouse or not? Your social circle, hobbies, if you fly a lot for work, and other variables. Getting up at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. is extremely challenging if you are working night shifts as a doctor, or if you're a student that has to pull a lot of all-nighters or goes to a lot of parties. If you're flying a lot and you spend most of the days jet lagged, then it can be physically painful to consistently wake up at the same hour. So to determine when would be the ideal time, ask yourself the following. Based on my current activities, both in my personal and professional life, when would be a perfect wake-up hour? Now that you have that number in mind, let's get to the real strategy. Now, as you know, waking up early has nothing to do with alarm clocks, but it has everything to do with these elements: your goals and mindset, your evening routine, the quality of your sleep, waking up, and your morning routine. So let's go through them. The mindset and your goals, it's kind of like mind over mattress. Now, we humans are creatures of instant gratification, and because of that, you'll try to find any possible excuse to sleep in, especially in the first several days of the habit. The biggest thing you need to know is that you will have to sacrifice a lot, particularly in the first month, and you have to be prepared for it. You might have to pass on a party. You'll experience energy drops, and your productivity will suffer, at least in the beginning. And you will need to lose the idea that you are not a morning person, and that's just a myth anyway. You need to put yourself in the first place, and you do that by setting goals. And there's two reasons why goals are important. They motivate us, and they dictate our activities. Each one of your goals has a set of activities that need to be done in order to achieve that goal. The second action was considering your evening routine. What do you do at night that may or may not work against you? Some people work late, then they get home, they're all wired up, they can't really settle down, so going to sleep at a set hour in order to wake up at 5 is a little difficult. Some people like to work out at night, but then they find that they're so up and amped up, ready to go, that they can't get to sleep, and which brings us to the third element, the quality of your sleep. One of the things I had to do early on in this process was start turning off all what we call the white light or the blue light, and that is no iPod, no iPads, no phones, you know, stop playing games like solitaire or whatever, stop checking headlines, stop looking at emails, because it was making my brain continue to work, and the brain was saying, we're up, you know, we see light. I start darkening the room, you know, maybe turning off one or two lights if I'm, you know, catching the last bit of a show, but typically I'm in bed every night by 11:30. And then the wake up and the morning routine is important. So yes, you set an alarm clock and you say you're going to get up at 5 o'clock every day. And that's great. What are you going to do when that alarm goes off? Are you just getting up, jumping in the shower? Are you getting up and getting on the treadmill? I typically just lie there for a few minutes. I want to think about my day. I want to clear my brain. I want to kind of meditate a little bit and just get myself focused on the day at hand. Typically, when I leave the office the night before, I write out a list of the 10 things that I want to accomplish the next day. So I'm kind of going over that in my head as well while I'm just lying there in the darkness. And then once I'm finally ready and I already know the first two or three things I want to do and how I'm going to do them, then it's time to jump in the shower or head over to the gym and get my day started. But I have found myself to be so much more productive with this, rather than getting up, say, if the office opens at 9:30, getting up at, say, 8 o'clock, taking a shower, running off to the office, and then, you know, jumping right into the workload. So give it a shot. See what you can do, and see whether or not it makes a difference in your life as well. But I'll tell you, once I got into this routine, now it's automatic. It doesn't matter whether it's a day off or not. I'm up at 5, and it's also automatic that, you know, about 11:30 at night, my body's telling me, let's go, it's time to get to bed. All right, now, next up, there was a lesson I think that could have been learned from this year's Super Bowl, and in the show preview, I mentioned that there's something we can all learn from Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, that not everybody employs in their business life. Now, love them or hate them, you can learn something from Brady and Belichick. No matter how far ahead you are, you need to always be ready for every situation. Now, please don't say that Tom Brady leading the Patriots back from a 28-3 deficit in the second half of the Super Bowl teaches you that you or anyone can overcome anything, because simply you can't. The fact that you are comparing yourself to Tom Brady is ridiculous. What it shows is that if you are the greatest quarterback of all time, playing for the greatest coach of all time, you have the ability to come back. If you train and prepare all the time to be great, you can overcome. Brady's diet, practice habits, and accountability of self and teammates is legendary. Do you do the same? Brady doesn't drink alcohol or coffee. Do you? Brady is first on the field and last to leave. Are you? Brady is first in the office and the last to leave. So there's many days, and there's a great documentary of the 2014 season when Brady would already be in the film room when Belichick showed up like an hour later. They could never figure out how he was. They thought for a while he was living at Gillette Stadium. Most importantly, Brady wants to be critiqued. Do you? He wants to be called out in front of his peers. He knows it makes him and his teammates better. Brady doesn't want extra paid time off. He doesn't want to complain about his manager or coach to his peers. He defends him. How about you? The intent of this story isn't to be a hard ass. I'm not Brady or Belichick either, and I just don't believe the lesson is learned from their comeback. The lesson is learned from the lead that the Falcons gave up. No matter how far ahead you are, you need to always be ready for every situation. Now, while statistics don't lie, the lead was huge. However, the defense was on the field the whole time, and those players were getting tired. No matter how far ahead you are, against internal or external competition, for a sales contest or for more business with a customer, there is always someone who's more prepared and more aggressive who's coming at you. No lead is safe. Imagine the competition. And what do I mean by that? I met with one of our store owners, and he said, you know, you don't have any competition here. There's no other trophy stores. And I go, there is a competitor. And I said, he works out of his garage. But more importantly, I said, there's Bob's Trophy Store. And he goes, well, where's that? I didn't see that in any of my research. I said, it doesn't exist. But in my mind, it does. And Bob does twice as much sales as me. So I have to be better than the imaginary Bob. So if you don't have a competitor, make one up in your head. And if you do, study them. What are their sales? Who are their customers? What are they selling? What are they doing different from you? And what can you do different from them to make you better? Now, people asked me before the Super Bowl if I wanted the Falcons or the Patriots to win. And I love the underdog as much as anyone. Rocky Balboa is the ultimate story. But he overcame the champ because the champ didn't practice hard and didn't take him seriously. Plus, Rocky worked and lived it 24/7. I wanted the Patriots to win because excellence is so rare in this life. 17 years of dominance, 7 Super Bowls, 5 wins, 6 straight AFC title games. It just doesn't happen often, and we should enjoy seeing that excellence. The same way I root for Jimmy Johnson in NASCAR with 7 championships. A great owner, a great crew chief, a great driver, and always prepared. Now, I'm sure the detractors will say that there are cheating stories out there, just like how Microsoft stole from Xerox, Google manipulates algorithms, Mark Zuckerberg stole Facebook, or that Tesla stole from Edison. Greatness is always accused of stealing because the ordinary can't help but throw darts at the extraordinary. I told the story before when I was a recruiter and getting into the office at 7 in the morning and leaving at 6 at night, then after dinner working until 10 or 11, while my peers got in at 8:30, left at 5, didn't do any extra work at night, and then they used to call me lucky because I was making more billings than them. Now, I'm not saying anyone mentioned, including the Patriots, are squeaky clean, but that doesn't take away from what makes them great. Rarely has anyone successful been void of controversy. It comes with the territory. But ask yourself, are you willing to work harder? Are you willing to prepare more? Are you open to criticism? Do you strive to be the best in order to be the best? And as my brother-in-law would say, think about it. But I love that one part of the story where Brady insists on accountability, the accountability of self. How many of us are willing to let our peers tell us when we're not pulling our own weight? I think I like that more than anything, and will probably be putting that into practice in my own business. Well, it's about 12:45. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about 7 ways that your small business can get more customers to call you. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weichert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce. Building business. Run business at a time.
Oh, you lucky dog, you. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. So glad you could join me for yet another hour every Thursday to talk about issues affecting businesses large and small here in Flemington in the beautiful county of Hunterdon in New Jersey. And glad that people are listening today from all over. People checking in from Phoenix, from Portland, and Boston, so and also Chicago. So glad you folks are listening in and could be a part of the show today. One of the things that a lot of businesses want is obviously to get more customers, and sometimes just to get customers to call them. It's tempting nowadays to think that everything can be done online. After all, if you can tweet the pizza emoji at Domino's and expect a piping hot pie to arrive in 30 minutes, how much more digital can things get? To this, I say, just hold on a minute, gunpowder. Don't assume that all customers adopt these channels, at least not exclusively. So take a step back to consider that even with all this technology at our fingertips, Google research reveals that 70% of mobile searchers call a business directly. The customer journey is more integrated than ever, crossing all forms of media and contact channels on the route to purchase. No small business can afford to ignore that persistent ringing object in the corner of the office. You know, the telephone? It's your conduit to a lot of new business and a closer connection to your existing customers. But how can you get more customers to call you? Understanding that customers still want to call is an important first step, but it isn't going to make anyone pick up the phone. That takes adjustments to your small business marketing strategy. So here are seven ways that small business owners can encourage more customer calls. First, you may want to spend more on click-to-call or CTC campaigns. Now, I've talked about ads before, but why not start there to drive up your inbound call volume? Find your most successful advertising channel and work in some compelling campaigns with a CTC focus. Not only will your business see a spike in calls, you'll be able to quickly compare performance to your existing online campaigns. You also want to review your existing call policy and procedures. Does your current training emphasize the importance of customer calls? Your team needs to know that picking up the phone is a crucial part of building a reputation and winning new business. Take a look at your current practices to make sure that calls are answered promptly and given the same level of service that you would offer in person. You want to use landing pages with a single call to action. When a promotional page emphasizes one course of action, it increases the likelihood that potential customers will take that route. make it clear that visitors should pick up the phone to receive a discount, and they are much more likely to call. Number four, get a more memorable number. Now, if customers can't remember how to get a hold of you, calls and sales could be slipping away. So add a memorable hook to your contact details by buying or licensing a custom phone number. A number with a memorable word, sequence, or similar digits aids recall and increases your call volume over time. Number five, add your phone number to social networks. As with most online businesses, social networks accepted a long time ago that their users still value a contact number. That's why you'll see prominent space for those traditional contact details and dedicated call advertising options on their platforms. So use those spaces to display your most memorable contact number and, where possible, include language that urges customers to call you. Number six, take another look at traditional advertising channels. In your rush to spend marketing dollars online, it's possible that you've forgotten about traditional forms of advertising. Give them another look. Ad space that used to be expensive in print publications and other offline spaces tends to be much more affordable these days. These channels also align well with the desire to pick up the phone, making them a promising source of increased calls. You also want to track your calls closely for strategy adjustments to squeeze more from your call-focused campaigns. It's important to know which ones are delivering. Use unique numbers or call tracking technology to help your marketing team separate different channels and review results from each. There are several excellent call tracking solutions out there. Pick the one that offers the best fit for your business and then set about crunching the numbers from your numbers. As you embrace new ways to get customers to call, you'll often find that your brand reputation sees an upswing as well. Use this positive sentiment to encourage word-of-mouth marketing initiatives. What begins with a simple commitment to talk to more customers can quickly spiral into a multifaceted marketing strategy for your small business. So there you go. I mean, it's all about what we call calls to action. And the number one call to action is, you know, call us. And that could be in a newsletter. It could be in a print ad. You know, the one that I really liked was, those calling us right now will receive a certain discount. I think that's a call to action that everybody would have an interest in. There's also been a lot of talk lately about cross-selling and upselling. And we do a little bit of that in our business. When we added the sign shop, we figured that we could cross-sell to our existing clientele. And then when we added the custom imprinted apparel division and the promotional division, same thing, that we could cross-sell to existing customers, the baseball league that also needs to have a promotional item or may need, you know, shirts for their coaches. So that would be a typical example of cross-selling. We also have people that come into the store, they pick up an order of, say, a few plaques, and then they turn around and they see an apparel display and say, oh, I didn't know you did apparel. Then we can upsell that to them, which is another form of cross-selling. But often, inside sales, order entry, customer service reps are reluctant to cross-sell and upsell because asking for more immediately after a good customer has placed an order seems like a greedy and a snarky sales technique. Yet both are important, and critical business strategies and the reasons to do them are compelling. What are the obstacles to cross-selling? When salespeople and customer service reps were asked, many responded that they didn't want to appear too pushy. They didn't want to face rejection, and or they didn't have the time, or they are not confident in their level of product knowledge. Sometimes order entry customer service reps also resist cross-selling because they said they did not sign up for a sales role and feel it's just not their job. In fact, often the cross-sell is not their job, but listening for cues and making referrals to colleagues can be a critical part of a proactive and customer-focused service environment. Amazon has made an art form out of suggesting, well, people who have ordered this have also ordered that. Now, while all of the concerns expressed by sales and service professionals can be valid, each stands in the way of the opportunity to strengthen relationships, to meet customers' broader range of needs, increase revenue, and create greater job satisfaction and often income for the reps. Actually, upselling can be good for the customer. When a buyer hears, you know, you can save a good amount of money if you order this quantity because we offer a volume discount. Can I change the quantity on your order today? They are introduced to an opportunity they may not have thought of. Excellent sales and service demand that you be proactive in meeting the needs of your customer versus just being an order taker. Up and cross-selling can be a tremendous way to provide unexpected value to your customer by anticipating and meeting their broader needs. The more you link your customers to your organization through multiple products and saving and volume savings, the stronger the bond, the relationship, and the customer loyalty. Remember, it's easier and more efficient to up and cross-sell to a present customer than to a prospective one. The best part about up and cross-selling is they can be very rewarding for your business. Cross-selling shows your customers that you are actively interested in their needs, and at the same time, it helps you gain a bigger share of your customers' business. If you offer great products, why not position your company as a one-stop shop? It is truly a win-win-win for the customer, the salesperson, and your organization. And good luck. Hopefully, if you do try this over the next couple of months or for the rest of the year, let me know how if you have any success with a program such as that. In sports, in NCAA men's basketball, the top 10 looks like this. Gonzaga is the number one, followed by Villanova, Kansas, Baylor, and Arizona. UCLA, Oregon, Louisville, West Virginia, and North Carolina round out the top 10. In NASCAR news, we are just 10 days away from the Daytona 500, and I can't wait. Good news for Danica Patrick. After losing her primary sponsor 2 weeks before the Daytona 500, Aspen Dental has come on board as a primary sponsor to fill the void left by Nature's Bakery. And NFL great LaDainian Tomlinson of the San Diego Chargers will be the honorary starter for the Daytona 500. Well, as always, it's been my pleasure joining you today, and I always end the show with some great advice I got from my father when I was just 6 years old that guides me in my personal and professional life every day. Maybe you can use it in your lives as well when he said, "Never let it rest until your good is better, and your better is best." If you have ideas for upcoming program topics or guests, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter at JimGano83, or on Facebook on our new page, Taking Care of Business with Jim Gano. I am Jim Gano, and I'm taking care of business. Make it a productive week, everybody. And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all right. Taking care of business and working overtime.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Psychiatrists in the county, because their waiting list is, you know, how many, that's why they're in and they're out. They're in and they're out. Write a prescription, let them out. Write a prescription, let them out.
Yeah, they have a lot of people that
they're because they don't have, you know, the time. And that's so sad, too.
Yeah. Larry, the same woman from Mental Health Association, Barbara Johnston, is the woman, her kind of advocate there.
Now, the patient has a right to say, no, they don't want to have Skype. Mm-hmm. And then they have to wait till a psychiatrist comes in. And usually it's the next morning. But it's just what we've come up with to try to solve these problems. We don't have enough psychiatrists. Oh, but they have psychiatrists on Skype in, you know, Nevada or Arizona or wherever. And, you know, in 2 minutes they can read what this person wrote and they'll make a decision. No, release them. No, we won't commit them, you know, or whatever. Right. And it's, to me, it's like, really? You know? But that's what they're doing because there's a lack of psychiatrists.
I met somebody that actually lived in Tennessee, and because kind of where they are and kind of out and kind of there's not a lot of health resources, and they use that kind of the tele thing for a lot of different things, their mental health as well as their physical health, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, again, to me, it kind of comes back to the fact that when you're dealing with physical health, you can take my blood pressure, you could take my temperature, you could do all these things, and they're very concrete, you know, very measurable, that when it comes to mental health, they don't have those kinds of tests,
right.
you know, and so it, for me, it's kind of like, there's a lot that each individual person, you know, to me, mental health is different than physical health in that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess if you said, well, Carol, you can have this or nothing at all, I guess I'm going to pick the, you know, the something rather than the nothing. But
yeah,
you
but
know.
even with medical help, person is not actually there in the room.
Yep. they call it tele-something or other. Yeah. Telepsychiatry or teleradiology. You're absolutely right.
And they're not there examining the patient where they may come up with something that